Hi, so good afternoon, everybody. Like John said, my name is Atul Mahajan on the left there, and this is work with my Microsoft Research colleagues, Jeetu, Sharad, and Brian. So I want to start off with asking, like, how many of you has actually used internet access on while riding a bus or a train? So a lot. So okay, so this talk's for you. So essentially, we started off this work a few years ago, roughly around the same time when Microsoft started their commuter to bus people from, you know, nearby cities or towns. And at the same time, and this trend was actually roughly at the same time when many public transit agencies were doing it and corporations, including Microsoft and Google, were doing it too. In fact, I think there are some statistics out there that roughly a quarter of Google's employees actually use these commuter services. There's also some data out there that basically say that people who use this facility actually love it. So it's a competitive thing for transit agencies to get more people to ride. And there are data out there that shows that people tend to ride more when that happens. So when we started using the service, all of a sudden we observed that there was actually, the performance was really poor. And funny thing that happened, like, people at Microsoft, they started complaining the service is poor. Microsoft service operators, they essentially put down this advisory that, you know, there can be lapses in backhaul coverage, system congestion, cancel a failed download and retry in approximately 5 minutes, because they had no idea what was going on. So we kind of got interested, you know, why is this happening? I mean, clearly, you know, is it congestion? Is it something else? So to give you some background as to how these things are built, essentially when you get internet access on board of these, essentially, when you get internet access on board this bus, what happens is there's a local Wi-Fi hotspot on the bus. Let's call it like a WAN proxy. And this WAN proxy, it multiplexes multiple users on top of this WAN link. WAN starts for wireless wide area network. And this link could be based on one of the cellular technologies like 3G eVideo or maybe WiMAX, one of the 4G technologies out there. And what we found when we collected data on this bus is that it's not the Wi-Fi connection that is poor. In fact, this is a very localized hotspot. So Wi-Fi performance is just fine, except the WAN performance is really bad in some cases. So what this graph shows is that we were sending, these are active measurements, we were sending data on top of WiMAX and eVideo, so we installed some of these cards on the buses. And the red lines for WiMAX, so what you see is like roughly 20% of the time, or 10% of the time, the loss rate is actually higher than 20%. eVideo, the loss rate in general is lower, so but around 3% of the 5 second interval, so this is basically loss rate, sorry, averaged over 5 seconds, and we are sending packets roughly 10 per second. And what we find is that like roughly 3% of the time, you see a very high loss rate. And these are not just our measurements in Seattle or Redmond. I think there are other studies that show that connectivity from moving vehicles on top of these links really is really bad. What these studies, and including our data, also suggest that this is happening not due to congestion, but this is just how the wireless medium behaves in this particular setting. The other thing to note here is that these are measurements done at the transport layer. So all the wireless low-layer recovery mechanisms have been taken care of. So this is basically what TCP will see. So as we all know, like TCP, especially when it's dealing with really short connections, which is the case here because you're doing web browsing or checking email, behaves really poorly. So it's no wonder that with given these loss rates, the connections that applications are seeing is really poor, and users actually see the impact of that. So the question then is like, what do you do about these losses? If you wanted to mask these losses from TCP and lower the loss rate that is seen by TCP, what can you do? So very broadly speaking, there are essentially like two methods to mask losses. One of this is called retransmissions. What happens in retransmission is that the sender sends a packet. If the receiver doesn't get the packet, it tells the sender, hey, I did not get the packet, and the sender sends it again. So it's a very efficient mechanism because unless a packet is lost, you don't need to send anything else. The problem with retransmission is that it does not really work in high delay environments. So the graph on the right there is essentially our data that's showing what is the delay, what is the round-trip delay on these links. So what we find is that, so this is a curve for eVideo. What we find, eVideo, which had less loss, remember, has like median delays about 150 milliseconds or something. And WiMAX is less, but it's still reaching about 40 milliseconds median delay. And retransmissions, they take about 1.5 round-trip times to recover a lost packet. And since, again, we are talking such high delays, they are not very appropriate in our setting. And I'll show some results later that retransmissions actually have poorer performance than what I'm going to propose in a bit. A second class of schemes is erasure coding. So this visual here shows a little bit like how erasure coding works. So what happens is that you send a packet P1, you send a packet P2, and then you send a mixture, so to speak, of packet P1 plus P2. So what happens is when the receiver gets a mixture, as long as only one packet was lost, the receiver can recover the other packet. So you don't need explicit knowledge of what was lost. You can send like a mixture of packets. That's basically erasure coding. So erasure coding is really good for this environment, actually, and this is not our observation. Other people have observed it too, that in high delay environments, we should be using erasure coding. Now, the problem with existing erasure coding methods, though, is they're completely oblivious to how much capacity is available in the path. So most of the systems like Maelstrom or Core that exist today, what they would do is they would add a fixed amount of redundancy. What I mean by redundancy is how many extra bits or how many extra packets on top of the basic data packets were sent by the sender. So these schemes, they have a fixed amount of redundancy. The problem there is that this amount of redundancy either could be too little, and you can have extra capacity in the path, in which case you are not providing as much protection as you could provide if you were to use all of the available capacity of the path. Or this redundancy is too high. And when that happens, if you have very high redundancy levels along the path, you're basically interfering with data transmissions themselves. Your data transmissions are queuing up behind your coded packets, and you may actually be doing more damage than good. I should say there are adaptive erasure coding schemes out there, but they adapt to loss rate. There's no erasure coding scheme that we know of that adapts to capacity available along a path. And adapting to loss rate has the same problem of you are either adding too much redundancy and interfering with data packets, or you're adding too little and being not as efficient as you could be with your transmissions. So with these observations, this is basically our main proposal. We have this scheme that we called opportunistic erasure coding. And it's an erasure coding method, the goal of which is to use all spare capacity for redundancy. So whatever's left over after the data packets have been sent, to use all of it. I say all to define a point, but it could be, you know, you want to use 50% of the link or something like that can also be specified. But let's go with you want to use all the capacity along the path. The challenge in doing that is that traffic on these networks, as you might imagine, is highly bursty. So there's that graph showing, again, real data from Microsoft commuter buses. What you see there is that on average, the traffic is not very much, but it actually bursts during intervals. So what that means is that if you want to use all spare capacity, it's not enough to match the redundancy overhead of erasure coding scheme to the average spare capacity. What you really need to be able to do is to adapt to this burstiness and use this capacity up in a bursty manner and figure out at short time intervals when does additional capacity arrive and use just that. So that's basically a primary challenge here, that we want a erasure coding scheme that uses up all capacity, but not on average, but at very, very short timescales of the burstiness of these packets. So we can think of opportunistic erasure coding has two pieces to it. So I'm not going to tell you how we actually achieve this. So OEC has two pieces. One is there's a transmission strategy to OEC, and then there's an encoding strategy. So the transmission strategy is actually very simple. What we say, we are going to send erasure coding packets, redundant packets, if and only if the bottleneck queue is empty. So we estimate the bottleneck queue, and we say, as soon as it's empty, we're going to send a packet. And any data packets that our application sends us to the sender coming from top, they are sent right away. So they are not delayed at all. Data packets are being sent. And then when we see, hey, here's an opportunity for us to send a redundant packet, we send it. So this kind of an opportunity mechanism, it has some very nice properties. A couple of them are that it dynamically adjusts the coding redundancy that you are achieving to match the instantaneous spare capacity. You know, one opportunity to send at the bottleneck queue opens up, and we say, okay, go. Now you go. And the other nice property is because we are not delaying data packets, no data packet actually ever gets queued behind a redundant packet. At most one will happen. If we send a redundant packet, data packet comes along. So data packets are delayed essentially minimally in here. So we are not adding a fixed amount of redundancy which can actually delay data packets. So no delay for data packets and instant and use of instantaneous spare capacity, so to speak. So that's essentially a transmission strategy. So any kind of erasure coding method, apart from transmission strategy, also needs to decide how to encode these data packets, how to encode all these redundant data packets. So over here, what we observe is that there are conventional, what I'm calling conventional codes, are codes like Reed-Solomon, or codes like even LT codes, which are rateless codes. So either rated or rateless codes are actually not appropriate for this setting. So keep in mind, because we are sending packets opportunistically, we do not know ahead of time how many redundant packets can be sent. But with codes like ReedSolomon or LT, what happens is they need to decide how much redundancy level exists in the network. And what happens with these codes is that if the receiver is actually not getting that level of redundancy or those many packets, they don't have graceful degradation. So if you encode over some bits of packets or some window of packets, if they don't meet the desired level of redundancy, what will happen is the receiver is not able to recover a lot of the data. So they actually just fall off the cliff when that happens. And in our setting, that's not a good property to have, because if we cannot meet a redundancy goal based on the data packets that are coming in, then receivers are not able to decode anything. So then we designed basically what we call like greedy encoding. We want a coding system where we can send packets opportunistically such that each coded packet is maximizing the amount of data that the receiver can recover. And so there's some arguments in the paper. We say under some simplifying assumption, it turns out the magic answer is take your window W of packets, and if you randomly pick -1 over natural log of R packets, that's the strategy here. And this derivation is under some simplifying assumptions that lost rates of packets are independent and the receiver has equal probability of having received each packet. And R is here the fraction of packets in W that the receiver already has. So to give you insight into like why this thing happens, let's say you have a window of packets where W is 10. So you have sent 10 packets and only one has been lost. So R in this setting is really high, and that function is actually inversely proportional. So in this case, when the receiver already has a lot of the window of the packets, the right strategy is to combine almost all 10 packets. Because no matter which packet of these has been lost, this is the most efficient packet that the sender can send at this point in time. On the other hand, if a lot of packets have been lost, so R is really, really low, what you should be doing is not combining too many packets. Because if you combine too many packets, what will happen is the receiver will not be able to recover new information. In which case, in this particular extreme setting, you are basically better off combining just one, which essentially boils down to just sending a duplicate packet, so to speak, because this is what's going to maximize new information at the receiver. So we take this transmission strategy, which is opportunistic, bottleneck QMT, and we take the greedy encoding, and we lay out in the paper a very nice, that the resulting system actually has a very nice property. And that has that the system is greedily maximizing good put with each packet transmission. So it's not easy to get some property you can reason about typically about a razor coding system, but in this case you can. And the property, like I said, is that every single action that the sender is taking is essentially maximizing good put, be it data packet or transmission. To give you some insight into how this derivation happens is that, first of all, since we are filling up the bottleneck queue all the time, any opportunity sent, we are maximizing throughput. So whether or not, so throughput is the amount of information received per second, and good put is the amount of new information received per second. So given that we are already maximizing throughput, whether or not we are maximizing good put depends on which packets we are sending in what sequence. And keep in mind, we are never delaying data packets. So that essentially means that we are actually sending all the data packets right away. And at the same time, every coded packet that we do transmit is actually designed to maximize the amount of information that the receiver recovers. So once we take these three factors into account, what we get is a system that is maximizing good put with each transmission, be it coded or data. One other nice thing I will lay out again in the paper is that you can actually retain this property even if you're striping your data over multiple paths. The trick here is to send your data packets using this thing called delay-based path selection. Again, this kind of existed in the striping literature. We did not come up with it. The idea is that when a data packet comes in, you estimate off the many paths you have which one has the least delay, and you send it along that. And we argue in the paper that once you combine delay-based path selection with the OEC, OEC continues to retain the greedy maximization property that I've laid out here. So we took OEC, and we essentially, coming back to moving vehicles and buses and trains and ferries and all that good stuff, we built this system called Pluribus, which is essentially applies OEC to the context of moving vehicles. The way OEC works today is that we have that same van proxy here, but we interject another proxy that is connected to the internet that we call LAN proxy. And opportunistic erasure coding essentially happens between the two proxies in either direction. So both proxies are essentially acts as sender depending on the direction of the data packet going in. So as I described OEC, we need to do any application of OEC in any domain, it needs to do two things. One is that the sender needs to estimate received packets, the sender needs to estimate the queue length, and the sender needs to identify which one is the least delay path. And in Pluribus, I'm not going to go into the details, but to just give you hints how to work through it, in Pluribus, we estimate the fraction of received packets by estimating the loss rate along the path. We estimate queue length by estimating capacity of the path. And this capacity estimation has been designed to be very conservative, such that we are more likely to send below capacity than over capacity, because we don't want to congest the path entirely. And we identify the least delay path by estimating the difference in the propagation delays of the two paths and the queues on those paths. And it turns out it's important to take queuing into account when you do that. And queuing can happen even if you are not queuing coded packets, because data packets you send right away and they can create a queue on the bottleneck queue. So you have to take that into account in figuring out where to send the next data packet. So we implemented this and deployed it. But before I show the results, let me touch on one thing. So in case you guys haven't noticed, what's happening essentially here, logically, OEC and Pluribus are filling the pipe. So we are really aggressively, at least, using these cellular links or WAN links. So now you might ask, why is that not such a bad thing? Why is that a bad thing? And I'm going to tell you it's not such a bad thing. And the reason is the following. So OEC is actually only, Pluribus and OEC, they're only logically filling the pipe. In reality, we stop sending coded packets after a round trip time, because TCP is going to recover them anyway. There's no point in us in trying to continue to send a packet that was sent, you know, to 200 milliseconds ago or something. So in practice, we see that the amount of coding redundancy we add depends on the function of load, but it tends to be like a factor of two or something. So let's say we are doubling the amount of data that's sent. The thing there is that that we believe that even if like WAN operators start charging the bus operators double the money for this double the traffic, what will happen is that this is a very small fraction of the operating cost for transit operators, so we think those costs are actually sustainable in the long run, because they have bigger costs to worry about. A larger issue that you might worry about that doesn't have to do with the cost per bit, it has to do with, like, are we hurting other users? You know, as my bus goes by, everybody there with their cell phones, are they just completely going to crash? So the answer to that is no, because these systems, these WAN systems, they are designed to isolate users from each other. The MACs ensure some kind of fairness. So just because I want to send all the time, unlike Wi-Fi, where I can actually, you know, if I start blasting away, I can actually hurt you guys a lot. And on the cellular MACs, that's not allowed. The other thing there to note there is that the real resource in cellular networks, it tends to be holding a key to the radio resource, to a dedicated channel. And once you have the dedicated channel, you can actually send as many bytes as you want. So, and the thing is, like, the thing, how quickly you release the resource is a timeout thing. So believe in reality, even though when we consume a factor of two more bytes, we are actually not consuming a factor of two radio resource. So to speak. So we are only delaying the tail by around, so we hold on to the radio resource maybe 100 milliseconds more than we would have without Pluribus and OEC in there. So evaluation. So what we did was we deployed Pluribus on two buses that work on Microsoft campus in Redmond, and we equipped each bus with two WAN links, one EVDO and one WiMAX. And these are real conditions. As these buses are seeing on campus, we cannot control loss rate, delay, whatnot, anything at all. The workload that we try is essentially trace driven. So with some other commuter buses, we noticed what the workload was in terms of TCP connections and the inter-arrival times. And in this deployment, we replay that workload, so to get a sense of how much performance we get. Because we cannot control everything in deployment, we also do some emulation-based experiments where we replay the conditions around loss rate, delay, to basically get repeatable and controlled conditions and to consider different environments. So this is the main result in some sense. This is a deployment running for, I think, multiple weeks where we did not do any loss recovery, which is, think of it as the current practice, and when Pluribus was doing OEC. And what we see is that Pluribus improved performance by a factor of four. So the measure of performance here is connection completion time. So we had this workload of TCP connections, and what we're measuring is how much time it takes to complete each connection. So what we see here is what the bars are plotting are mean connection completion time, and those whiskers are essentially confidence intervals around the mean. So what we see is that Without loss recovery, we see completion times are around more than 4 seconds, and with Pluribus, we see something under 5 seconds. So now you might ask, because Pluribus, the amount of redundancy it's added is a function of load, how often spare capacity happens. As you might wonder, as soon as maybe two more riders get on the bus, does the whole thing break down? Because at that, we are not able to send any packets. So what we do, again, in deployment, we essentially increase the amount of workload. And the way we increase the workload, we take the workload and we add more connections by reducing the inter-arrival time amongst new connections. So we went up to, this became kind of difficult. We doubled the workload, we saw improved performance. We did like 4 times the workload, we did 8 times the workload. And what we see there is that Pluribus continues to provide an advantage. And that's happening without, and it does so without actually kind of damaging the data traffic, which is why I think we see a performance gain here that persists, as even if workload on these buses is increased by a factor of 8 in there. So I mentioned other loss recovery methods. So this is an experiment we did. This is in emulation, so we could actually control the loss rate. So what we did, take an emulated link and add loss rate, a bursty loss rate model based on Gilbert, and we noticed the performance of these systems as a function of loss rate. So essentially, I've cut this graph off at 12 seconds. It's the same measure of performance, completion time, so we can actually see what the graph shows. And what we see is that compared to all these other methods, one of which is not doing any loss recovery, one of which is retransmissions, this one. By the way, this bottom line is Pluribus. This is retransmissions, and these two lines correspond to adding 10% redundancy or 100% redundancy. And the way these redundant packets are sent are in line with this code called, erasure coding method called Maelstrom, essentially. So with 10% redundancy, every 10th packet is a coded packet. With 100% redundancy, every other packet is a coded packet. So what we see here is that essentially Pluribus, or rather OEC, is actually outperforming each of these systems. It's outperforming retransmissions because retransmissions have recovery delay, which is too high in these systems. You are much better doing erasure coding. It's interesting that it's also outperforming the redundancy schemes, and this goes back to the amount of spare capacity argument that I was making. Pluribus is actually using all spare capacity there is, but it's using them in a very smart manner. Actually, in this particular experiment, the amount of redundant data being generated by Pluribus is pretty similar to the amount of data being generated by the 100% amount of redundant data being generated is pretty similar to the 100% redundant scheme. But because we are opportunistic, when we send this stuff, we actually see better performance. The other thing to take away from this graph is that even if you had erasure coding method that was adaptive to loss rate, so the thing is, like, any kind of fixed redundancy is optimal for some loss rate on this x-axis. So if you read this graph that way, at that point, wherever that loss rate is completely optimal for the system, what we see is that even loss rate adaptive erasure coding methods would not be able to compete with Pluribus in there. So I'm not going to go into some other details that micro benchmark Pluribus, but I just want to just throw it out there. What we find in these environments is that our loss rate estimation error is low, and we quantify the impact on OEC since the encoding strategy is a function of the loss rate, and our estimate, what we find is that any impact of any inaccuracy is low, that in these environments with WAN links, we can estimate not just the loss rate, but also the path delay, so to speak, and what we find, there's some experiments we did to see it's important to account for queuing delay once you are accounting for what the total path delay would be. And to give you a sense of like how much coded packets do we actually generate once we are trying to fill the pipe, and it turns out, well, as you would expect, it's a function of load. But once we do, so the work, once we replay the workload as measured, the fraction of coded packets is 67%. And once we increase that workload by a factor of 8, what we find is that the amount of coded packets is about 35% in there, in the system. Okay, so to sum up, what I talked about is OEC. It's a new erasure coding method that is meant to mask losses in high delay environments while using up all spare capacity. Like I said, the challenge here for us was to be the amount of spare capacity and the amount of data being transmitted over the links is bursty, and we used the estimated bottleneck queue length to actually send it in a very bursty manner. And we apply this stuff to this vehicular context, and what we find is it improves the completion time by actually a factor of 4. So OEC essentially, to reiterate, has two mechanisms at its heart. This idea of opportunistic transmissions to send things when the queue is empty, and this idea of greedy encoding to encode stuff that is based at this very moment such that the amount of new information at the receiver would be maximized. And these mechanisms, I would argue, are actually general, because we've thought about using opportunistic transmissions, for instance, to send log data, or any kind of low priority data can be sent such that it actually will not interfere with high priority data. This is, you can do this without any support on the bottleneck queue itself. The senders are coordinating. And greedy encoding can, of course, be used in any kind of setting where you actually don't know how much redundancy you can add. And you say you want to basically have a greedy online optimal system that maximizes at each action amount of information at the receiver. And with that, I'll end. Thank you.
Phil, Stanford University. So it seems like you're taking something like fountain codes, but because you have this knowledge of R, then you can compute a better mixing distribution. So the question I would ask is, if instead I did fountain codes over your window of packets, mm-hmm. and then I sorted the packets such that they have the lowest and the low degree ones first, right? So the ones that are basically just raw packets versus mixed packets, the mixed packets later. What kind of, I mean, is there a big performance gap there, a small performance gap? What does the mixing ratios look
like? So we did that experiment. I think the sorting thing is basically, I think there's a class of fountain codes that actually sends all the raw data first. And this boils down to that. And what we find there, so the thing is, like, it's not just estimating the loss rate of the path. R is actually dynamically varying, because with each coded packet that you send at the receiver, R goes higher. So the thing with fountain code design, if you don't, the problem we were running into was that fountain codes rely on like K of N packets making it, and we could not guarantee that what that K might be without being too conservative about the K, which adds overhead. So this is underneath what's going on. So experimentally, what we find is that the performance improvement we get with OEC and the greedy encoding versus fountain codes were about, I think about 30%. So you could use it, you'll just lose that 30% in it,
Hi, I'm Brad Andrews from Google. Great paper. Two questions. One is, did you actually test this with users and get some user feedback on their experience on the buses?
We did very controlled studies with a small subset of the users. And the reason we could not do, and we were well on our way to do real study, the reason we could not do it, I think, the timing, so these buses are the buses that are taking people on, so Microsoft has two classes of buses. One is like our commuter buses that run long distance and go from Redmond to Seattle. That contract we've outsourced, so we don't have any ability to change things on that. We have more ability to change our shuttle systems, and we were working with MSIT, Microsoft IT to deploy it. But at the same time, I think right around the time when we were actually doing this work, smartphones came along. So on those really short rides, all people wanted to do was to quickly check their email and calendar. When we started this work, smartphones were not around, and like MSIT was kind of pushing us to deploy this stuff. But because that happened, I think all of a sudden the need for internet access on these buses somewhat kind of disappeared in there. But so the long answer is kind of no.
Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to try the longer range buses and really see how it's affecting users. Yeah. The second question is, did you notify the wireless carriers that you were doing this or work with them at all? Or would you if you were to carry this further?
We worked with wireless carriers to the extent that we shared our results with them. We did not ask for the permission in doing our experiments. So we basically, I think the eVideo carrier was Sprint, and Microsoft is basically, we have contractual relationship with pretty much all local carriers, including WiMAX, Sprint, and like, so we shared our results with them. This is what we see, I think, for WiMAX, for instance, the Clearwire was the WiMAX carrier, and they took some of our results, and they could not understand why we are seeing so many loss rates. And for us, we shared them, and they kind of came back, I think, maybe a year later or something, and they said, okay, it shouldn't be that lossy anymore, but we had done the work by then,
Thank you.
Hi, Masoud Mushaf from USC. I wonder what is the effect of the number of people in the van and the number of vans in the street on this system. For example, can we deploy this in a very crowded street, and the effect of crowds on the occupancies in the queue, what would be the effect of that?
So we have not done any experiments. Those kinds of experiments are, I don't quite know how to do it. But here's why I think that any kind of damage would be limited. What really matters, and I kind of alluded to that in the talk, what really matters in cellular connections at least, I think WiMAX is a little different, but cellular world, what you hold on to really, the resources, do you or do you not have a dedicated channel to the cell tower? That's the real resource. So if you have like multiple buses, the thing is like if some of them, the real source of contention then becomes like how many people can get the channel and how quickly can you release the channel. So I think any damage that we do has to do with the fact that after the last data packet was transmitted, we may hold on to the channel maybe a couple of hundred milliseconds more than you would have without OEC. And that is a really small fraction compared to the timeout of releasing that dedicated channel on cellular networks. So for instance, the measurements that we've done and others have done on smartphones and things, the 3G protocols and cellular protocols are such that you hold on to the dedicated channel like 5 seconds after the last packet has been sent. So think of that. So what we are doing is after the last real packet has been sent, we are holding on to the channel about 5.2 seconds more. So that'll have some implications, but not big ones in like my opinion. Yeah. Cool. Thank you.